Okay. So, if he transplants it now to a properly cultivated soil, mitiva sheyatzliach ba asher leshahu, and yes, it'll be natural that when it takes root there, it'll be so much more successful. Or may God lay shum. Now he cultivates it there in that new fertile ground. It's going to blossom so much better. Yes, it was already producing great fruit in the desert. When you take it and move it into fertile area, it's going to shine. The Yashuv Pardesiach Hashem Midbari. And suddenly you see it taking on the quality of an orchard tree rather than a desert tree. The Yirbach Hashem Ma'at. Suddenly you'll see it becoming so much more prolific than it was beforehand. Shelo haya nimtza elo be'eis sheyizdamin u'b'mokin sheyizdamin. It's now achieving potentials that it could not have unless it's in the right place at the right time and being cultivated in the right way. So again, yes, if it's a really great seed, it'll produce even if it's just planted in a haphazard place and not cultivated properly. But if you then move it to the right place and cultivate it in the right way, it's going to shine so much more. So therefore, yes, once Hashem transplanted Avram to Eretz Canaan, all of his spiritual campaign took on a whole new dimension. It was raised to a whole new level. And you also see that, yes, now Avram Avinu suddenly connected to things he had never been connected to before. Nevuah now became a part of his life, and not only of his life, but also of his seed, his children, his grandchildren, great-grandchildren who lived in Eretz Yisrael. Nevuah was a regular part of their existence. This was because now that seed was growing in the right place. What's that? One of the first, yeah. Yes, there were many prophets during the time that they lived in Eretz Canaan. Which of course, like we said before, it's not enough that it's the right seed and it's not enough that it's in the right soil, but also this was further enhanced by being cultivated in the right way. The right seed and the right soil, being cultivated right. What is cultivated right? When you have the Jew planted in Eretz Yisrael and performing all the mitzvahs, living according to the exact directions of Hashem, he is connecting, tuning in to that unbelievable potential of connecting to that divine conduit which brings that influx of prophecy of Shechina into the world and upon him. Koshe can be Motzei Shechina v'inyan Eloiki. Especially since the Shechina actually hovered in Eretz Yisrael. Like we described earlier, the Shechina is actually hovering in Eretz Yisrael, waiting for someone to connect to it. It's waiting for the landing pad. Right? As soon as a person comes and makes himself the conducive landing pad, the Shechina rests upon him.
The Shechina is waiting. The Shechina is hovering. Right? We already see that from the beginning of creation.
The second pasuk of the Torah tells us the land was waste and emptiness, and it was just darkness over the depth. And the Spirit of Hashem was hovering over the waters. Meaning, what is that? What does it mean? What's the significance of the Spirit of Hashem hovering over the waters? It means that from the earliest time of creation, Hashem was waiting. Hovering, waiting. For what? For the person upon whom he's going to ride in this world. So, yes, the Shechina is waiting for that person to come and turn himself into a landing pad. The Shechina rests upon him, and that person becomes a bearer of the Shechina in this world. That's the term that we use for it, is Merkava LaShechina. Person becomes a chariot of the Shechina, bearer of the Shechina in this world. This is what Avraham Avinu became in Eretz Yisrael. That's what the prophets and the pious were.
Okay, now I'm going to skip these next couple of lines because he's referencing philosophical concepts that we'll have to get more into, and he's going to get into them later in the Sefer. And I don't want to just mention them now if we're not going to be able to treat them properly now. But okay, whatever it is, we'll move on to the next Ois. Ois Tezvav. Omar HaKuzari. So now the king says, Eile kolei ha-chokhma she-tzuchim lifroit. These are philosophical concepts that we have to discuss in detail. Ve'ein za'at ha-mekoymer. But it's not its place right now. He's referring to what we just skipped, right? He mentioned a couple of philosophical concepts, and I basically followed the king of Kuzar's lead. He said that, all right, let's not get into that now. We'll save it for later. It'll be later in the Sefer. Later, at the right time, I'll discuss it with you further. Okay, we're putting that on hold. But now, but right now, continue your exposition on the qualities of Eretz Yisrael. Okay. So, Omar Achod. So the sage continues. Haysam Lamedes Lahayshir Kol Ha'oilam. Eretz Yisrael is really destined to set the entire world on the right track. Meaning, the world is a certain speck of reality that is detached, a speck of existence that's detached from true reality. What is the oilam? What does the word oilam mean? The word oilam is from the word alum, hidden, ne'elam. Right? The true reality is the upper worlds where Hashem's glory is all pervasive, all apparent. There's this tiny speck of existence where Hashem is concealed, so to speak. It's the oilam, the concealed world. Right? But Hashem made an Eretz Yisrael. What is Eretz Yisrael? Eretz Yisrael is the skylight. That's where this world connects to the next. That's where there can be an influx of the Kedusha from the next world coming to this world and make things clear. It can override the darkness of this world, override the illusion of this world. Really, Eretz Yisrael is meant as the plug through which the electric charge of the true worlds come into this world and set the whole world straight. And it was destined, it was designated for the Jewish people since the time that the nations separated. Meaning, as we've discussed earlier, at those early periods in history, all of mankind was able to come and lay claim to that role of mankind as being the bearer of the Shekhinah, if they would only connect to that divine connection, right? We discussed earlier in the Sefer. But it already reached the point where Hashem said, that's it, all of mankind has drifted too far. Now, the role of mankind, the destiny of mankind, the essence of mankind, is now just in the seat of Avraham. But the truth is that already occurred earlier. At the point where all of mankind was scattered by the Dor HaPlugah, right, by the Tower of Babel, where Hashem scattered the people all around earth, it was at that point already where Hashem basically said, forget it. Let people disperse around the earth. The rest of mankind is not going to connect to the real purpose of the existence anymore. Let them have China. Let them have all the other continents. Eretz Yisrael remained reserved for those who still retain the initial concept of mankind, for those who are still capable of filling out that role. So since then, it was really designated, destined for the Jewish people. K'mo she'ne'emar, like it says in the pasuk, Banchel Elyon Goyim, when Hashem granted each all the different nations their different, their respective territories, Eretz Yisrael remained designated as the place where the Jewish people would settle and fulfill their ultimate role. Now, Avraham Avinu grew to the peak of what a human being can grow to through his own capabilities in Chutz La'aretz. But to actually make that connection and become bonded with the Shekhinah, to actually have the Shekhinah come and connect to you like that, could not happen. The Sheikh Chaysim Adris also, that Hashem should actually make a covenant with Avraham Avinu. Meaning, that Hashem should bond with Avraham Avinu. Hashem should, so to speak, marry Avraham Avinu for all of eternity. All that couldn't happen Ela acha shaya ba'aretz hazois b'ma'amad ben ha'besarim. That couldn't happen in Chutz La'aretz. That could only happen in this land, as indeed happened at Ben Abbasarim. At the Bris Ben Abbasarim, Hashem bonded with Avraham Avinu for all of eternity. Beforehand, it was Avraham Avinu from his side, working as hard as he could to grow as much as a human being possibly can. But that it should culminate with Hashem responding and saying, okay, this is now going to be mutual, that could only happen in Eretz Yisrael. Hashem only responds to a person like that and connects to a person like that in Eretz Yisrael. And what can you say? Because the ultimate of this is, the ultimate fulfillment of mankind's destiny is, when you have that whole nation of people who are what that original human being was meant to be. The bearer of the divine. Who are indeed referred to as Am Hashem. Hashem identifies them as his people. He identifies himself as the God of these people. This could only be in Eretz Yisrael. Ba'aretz miyuchedes nikreis nachlas Hashem. Who are living in that special land that's called the inheritance of Hashem. So it's Hashem's people and Hashem's land. That makes sense. Where do your children live? Your children live in your home. So these are Hashem's people living in Hashem's land. Living in the home of Hashem. And not only that, but Hashem also, again, he's bringing out the greatness of the Jewish people, and this is not a religion which man built based on his understanding. This is Hashem came and told the Jewish people, connect with me here in this land, this is where I'm here for you. And he also told them specific times, at these times I'm here for you. He's referring to the Sholish Regalim, in which Hashem especially bonds with the Jewish people. Not based on their own conclusion. When they decided that these are auspicious times to connect with Hashem, to bond with Hashem, it's not because they figured it out by themselves, it's because Hashem told them. With these people, in this place, at this time, you can get me in my fullest, so to speak. That's what the Mayadim are. Nikru Mayade Hashem. These are called the Mayade Hashem. Meaning the truth is, we've mentioned this before. The revelation of Hashem in this world, the revelation of the Shekhinah in this world manifests through a few different mediums. It manifests through place, right? The Shekhinah manifests more in one place than another, and that is, of course, Eretz Yisrael. More intensely, Yerushalayim. More intensely, the Beis HaMikdash. Right? Hashem also manifests, reveals himself through the medium of man. Right? The right people. That's the Jewish people. They're the receptacles. They're the ones who are actually plugged in, capable of bringing through that godly charge. Yeah. And Hashem also reveals himself through the medium of time. Meaning, at some times, he is manifest, he reveals himself more than at others. So when you have the right people, in the right place, at the right time, you have the epitome of the revelation of Hashem. And now, all that, the right people, in the right place, at the right time, in order to really bring out that divine presence, in order to really bring out the divine revelation, it also has to go along with Vitarois, Vavoidois, Udvarim, Umasim. You have to follow a very specific procedure. Yes, they come to the right place at the right time, and then they follow very specific directives. They do this, they do that, they refrain from this, they refrain from that, they're in this physical state, they're in that physical state. Right? They have to be Tahar, they have to do all the right Avoidus, and that actually creates that influx, that burst of the Shekhinah's shine in them. All dictated by Hashem. And all these things are called service of Hashem, the work of Hashem. We're working on, right? If you're told, you want to, there are radio waves in the air. But in order to be able to get anything out of them, you can be a place, we're sitting here now, full of radio waves, full of waves with all kinds of sounds and sights are floating through the air, but we're not connected to them because we're not tuned in. So you tell a person, we'll talk radio, we won't even talk more modern technology. There's great things to hear in this room now. It's all here. But first you have to plug in your machine. Then, again, I'm talking about prehistoric times. You have to turn the dial just so that you tune in exactly. Remember when it worked that way? You turn the dial just so that you get the channel right, and then those sounds fill the room. But otherwise, you can be in the right place. It's all here. But if you're not tuning it exactly right, nothing will happen. You'll get static. Or you might get some very rudimentary sounds. But by tuning it exactly right, you can really bring it out. So that's what's going on here. Hashem says, if you're in this place at this time, and you're tuning it exactly right through doing the precisely right actions, doing the Avodas HaKarbonis with all their fine details, you'll manage to tune into the Shekhinah, and the Shekhinah will come shining in this world. Amar HaKuzari. The Kuzari king says, okay, B'Seder HaZer Ro'i She'eroi K'vod Hashem L'Uma Anikre Sam Hashem. If so, yes, I'm starting to understand this concept. I'm starting to understand how it's indeed fitting that, yes, Hashem is revealed through the medium of this nation called the Nation of Hashem. Okay. Now, the sage moves on to continue. Shalom Aleichem. The sage moves on to continue illustrating, showing different manifestations of the greatness of Eretz Yisrael. And here we're going to be leading into a very profound discussion. Omer HaKov. So now the sage says, Haloitira Eich Kibla Ha'oretz Shabbosos. You want to see another manifestation of the land's inherent Kedusha? Which again, as we said, it carries that Kedusha in a way, even independent of the Jewish people. The Jewish people come there, it's like planting the right seed in the right soil. But this land is charged by its own. How's that? In the phenomenon of Shabbos. Now Shabbos here, there are two types of Shabbos. There's the weekly Shabbos, and then there's the yearly Shabbos, Shemitah, right? So you see how Shemitah manifests in Eretz Yisrael alone. There's suddenly a certain Kedusha settles on the land, and you're not allowed to work the land. These aren't just external halachas. These are halachas that are stemming from the spiritual state of the land. You're not allowed to work the land at this time. The land should rest to Hashem. Like this land has different requirements. It has spiritual requirements, unlike any other land. No other land has inherent spiritual requirements. This land, you're going to be messing it up if you're going to be working it on this time. Not just that you're messing yourself up because you're commanded to observe the Shemitah, but you're going to be ruining the land in a spiritual way, which will manifest physically as well. Also, there are all kinds of restrictions on the land. You can't use the land in whatever way you want. You can't even consider yourself an absolute owner of your own property. For example, Hashem says, keep your hands off this land. You can't decide to sell this land in a permanent way, right? That's another halacha. Any sale of the land is limited to 50 years. Do not sell this land permanently, because this land is mine. You have to always remain consciousness that you're living in Hashem's domain. It's not yours to handle with. And therefore you always have to sense that you're walking on eggshells when you're living in Eretz Yisrael. That's what the purpose of these halachas are. Remember, here you're a guest. Here you are on someone else's territory. You own land, you don't own it. Hashem says, I let you sell it up till 50 years. But remember, when you're living in Eretz Yisrael, you're living in Hashem's territory. You're living in the palace of the king. You act appropriately. And also, you don't act presumptuously. Nothing here is yours. Even if I let you sit on a chair, don't start thinking the chair is yours. Don't think you can take the chair home with you. I let you live on the land. But, now you back off. Now Vida, and now he adds a point that's really going to get us into a whirlpool. Ki Shabbosa is Hashem, Umayadeh Hashem, not only the Shemitah, but also the Shabbos itself. Also depends on the land. What does this mean? What this means is as follows. As we said before, time carries Kedusha. Hashem reveals himself through the medium of time. Meaning, we know that every week, every seventh day, all of a sudden, there's a much greater influx of Shekhinah. There's much more of Hashem, so to speak, in the world on Shabbos. Hashem brings himself into the world in much more a powerful way. Time also carries divine revelation. But the sage is saying now that this actually, it's the land that activates that time. Why? Because it's Eretz Yisrael that got the whole cycle of time moving. What does that mean? So here, we're getting into a pretty fundamental question, which is a general, universal question, not just in Judaism. The sun, and here we're getting into a big discussion. We'll just introduce it now. We'll probably continue next week. The famous question of the date line. The sun is always moving around Earth. Theoretically speaking, if you follow the orbit of the sun, you'll never hit night. Right? So if so, what will that mean? That you're going to live one long Tuesday? What if you travel with the sun? You can do it. What if you travel with the sun endlessly? You never experienced the night. Did you live one long Tuesday? Or did the day change? So everyone agrees that there has to be some point on the globe where the day changes. Right? Example, when you travel to Japan, have you moved 18 hours ahead or 6 hours back? Right? Have you moved, when you cross the dateline, have you moved into last night? Or have you moved ahead into tonight? Right? So it's all relative. So how do you determine where the day begins and ends? Is there anything inherent? So if you're just going naturally, there can't really be anything inherent. Right? Universally, what's followed? We follow right those by Greenwich Village. Right? The line opposite Greenwich Village is considered the date line. From my limited understanding, I never really studied the subject properly. But again, you get the problem that we're dealing with here? Where do you determine where day begins? So, according to my understanding of the limited research that I did on this, the reason that basically Greenwich Village was decided on is because we don't want to have a situation where you travel for 5 minutes or you walk a few blocks down and you suddenly moved into yesterday. Right? Because if you're going to decide on the dateline that crosses the continent, that's what it's going to be. People on this street are holding by Wednesday. And you go around the corner, it's Tuesday. So therefore, arbitrarily, but logically, rationally, the decision was made to form a dateline that crosses to have a dateline that crosses 180 degrees of the globe, while crossing as least dry land as possible, such that you don't have a situation where the dateline can be crossed on dry land. And that way you don't have that problem. You're not going to have complications of what is today. But obviously it's arbitrary at the end of the day. There's nothing inherent about it. The question is, how does it work in Judaism? When is Shabbos? Where does the cycle of the week begin? So the truth is that the Kuzari is saying that Eretz Yisrael activates the beginning of the week. Meaning, the sun was considered to have begun its orbit from Eretz Yisrael. Okay? Which means that day begins in Eretz Yisrael. This means that if you live at all east of Eretz Yisrael, you will be in yesterday. Right? And if you move west of Eretz Yisrael, if you move west of Eretz Yisrael, the sun moves westward. If you move west of Eretz Yisrael, you are moving ahead in time. If you move east of Eretz Yisrael, you're moving backward in time. Right? Now, this is not so simple. You know, I'm just going to give a lot of... I wasn't sure if we should really get into the subject or not. I'll try to present the discussion in a basic way, and we'll move through it quickly. But I want to just present the background. Basically, there is a major debate among the Pesachim. No, There's no, nobody says that it goes by Greenwich Village. Again, Greenwich Village is a completely arbitrary decision. Nobody says that it goes by Greenwich Village. And another point is, everybody agrees that the focal point should be Eretz Yisrael, because Eretz Yisrael is a central point in the world. So the question is, how does that work? And here I'm presenting it, basing it based on my limited understanding from what I saw in the Chazon Ish. The different possible ways of slicing it is like this. You can either make an argument and say that we want to have a situation, the main implication is Shabbos, right? So you can either say we want to have a situation where all the world observes Shabbos when it's Shabbos in Eretz Yisrael. How can you do that? Is it possible to do that? Well, it is if you say that Eretz Yisrael is exactly in the midpoint of the dateline. Meaning, the dateline starts on the opposite side of Earth. Right? And Eretz Yisrael is 12 hours into the orbit that constitutes the dateline. If so, Eretz Yisrael will share the 24 hours that Shabbos in Eretz Yisrael for the beginning of those 24 hours, it'll still be Shabbos on the other side of the globe. And the end of those 24 hours, the beginning of the 24 hours, this side of the globe will share Shabbos with Eretz Yisrael. The end of the 24 hours, this side of the globe will share Shabbos with Eretz Yisrael. That's the logic in saying that the dateline begins on the opposite end of the globe of Eretz Yisrael. But the other argument could be that no, time should begin with Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael is where it all begins. And therefore, Eretz Yisrael will consider the beginning. Okay, everything moves on from there. And yes, people on the other side of the globe will be keeping Shabbos when it's not Shabbos in Eretz Yisrael at all anymore. Yeah. Now the third understanding, and this is the opinion that we're going to see espoused by the Khazarian, also held by the Baal HaMor, is that we don't quite go to such an extreme. If you're going to say that Shabbos begins with Eretz Yisrael, you're again going to have a situation where a person living at the edge of Eretz Yisrael will step down the block and it's going to be yesterday. Now, you want to grant Eretz Yisrael the distinction of being what begins time. You don't want to create a ridiculous situation where a person who steps outside of Eretz Yisrael is stepping into yesterday. And therefore, what we say is, you know what? No. It should begin with Eretz Yisrael, but in a more logical way. What's the more logical way? It begins with the continent of Eretz Yisrael. Meaning, it begins with the beginning of the continent where Eretz Yisrael is. That basically means that the dateline will begin with China. At approximately around the area of China. Which means that the day starts 6 hours before the sun reaches Eretz Yisrael. China is basically 90 degrees away from Eretz Yisrael in the circle around Earth. So Lamaisa, okay, before we actually see how the Khazari treats this, I'm just going to note that this sounds like a very theoretical, astronomical discussion, but this became very, very relevant. It became famous, controversy exploded about 60 years ago when a lot of Jews settled in Shanghai, when they ran away from Europe and settled in Shanghai. If you go with the understanding that that the dateline starts on the other side of the globe of Eretz Yisrael, it's Shabbos in Shanghai before it's Shabbos in Eretz Yisrael. If you go with the understanding that it starts 90 degrees before Eretz Yisrael, then Shabbos in China, Shabbos in Japan, is after Shabbos in Eretz Yisrael. Okay? Now this became a big machloikis at that time, when it became a relevant question. It was a large Jewish community living in Japan. And the question is, which day is Shabbos? There was a big controversy among the poskim. Some said one day, others said the next day. There's with Machloikis in the Chazon Ish and Tikhachinsky among others. And there were people who kept 2 days of Shabbos. But it really reached ahead when Yom Kippur came around. because now there was a question of 2 days. Which of the 2 days is Yom Kippur, depending on where the dateline starts? Does the dateline start yet before Japan, which means that Yom Kippur is the day before, or is it the day after Eretz Yisrael? This became a big machloikis, and the Chazon Ish was very, very strong on his opinion that China follows Eretz Yisrael, that the dateline begins 6 hours before Eretz Yisrael, not 12 hours before Eretz Yisrael, 6 hours before Eretz Yisrael, and he therefore was very strong about that. There were people who were figuring that they'll fast both days, right? The people who did that, they lied, many of the Talmidim of the Mir Yeshiva, they davened the first day and they lied in bed the second day. They fasted both days. But the Chazon Ish was very strong. He said, no, eat the first day and fast the second day. Okay, this is a very famous machloikis. A lot has been written about it. Whatever it is, the Khazari is going to bring out his point that the dateline actually begins with Eretz Yisrael. I think that we... You know what? I'll put it up for vote. What does the Ilum say? Should we actually go through the Khazari's lengthy astronomical explanation? Or should we suffice with what we just discussed and then begin with the next part next week?